This is professional radio, gentlemen.
That would and be it's front wheel drive.
Scotty, have you got anyone you want to thank?
Just myself.
And now we do the after hours.
Gentlemen, what would you go for?
Thanks to your sin there.
Okay, and because it's not a supercar.
But it is.
It's not.
Automotive perfection comes in the form of two letters, A and U.
Long live my LTD.
Welcome to Car Talk. It's Tuesday night here in Japan, of all places, online with Mr. Scotty Doe Johnson from it. He's now our Melbourne correspondent.
I am too.
The only one.
Melbourne correspondent.
He's currently the only one on this call that's in Melbourne. We've got Edward, who's in the room next to me, David Prince, who's about two rooms away. And then we will have Thomas on in a couple of minutes when he chooses to jump on. How are you, Scotty? Because I've seen you guys for the rest of the day.
I'm doing all right. Just, having holidays.
You've got a cool holiday, Scotty.
Yeah. Yep.
Excellent.
How are you recovering from last week's bad chest infection? Because you didn't sound great last week.
No, I wasn't the best. Still recovering. Not there yet. Going back again tomorrow.
Okay.
Because I think I've pulled something from all the coughing and, I have to breathe. So
that's such a pain. I will know how frustrating it can be because your term just goes on in number of weeks, however many weeks that term is, and then you get the weeks. It's not really holidays. It's recovery time, basically, before it all starts.
Pretty much. Yep. To recover, and then you're back into it again.
Exactly.
Quite literally. But it's good to see that you're on the mend. Hopefully that you haven't put anything too badly, mate, because we need you up and about. But how's Melbourne going? Is it burned down without us?
The weather's actually been really, really good.
Yeah, I've heard.
It's been nice and warm, and it's been really good so far.
About 24
to be rainy tomorrow, but the whole weekend, and that's been really good.
Oh, very good. Very, very, very good. It's been bloody hot here in Japan. In the 30s, I think every day we've been here, plus the crazy humidity. But anyway, Scotty, obviously, sorry, I'll rephrase. So four of us have been in Tokyo at the start. Then we went to Nagoya. Now we're currently in Kyoto. I thought tonight's episode is going to be a little bit different. We're going to talk about the car-y stuff that we've done here in Japan. So Scotty, you're all on board for the trip.
Yep.
And we're going to discuss some of the weird and wonderful things we've seen so far, with plenty of time still yet to go. So our tour guide, Mr. David Prince, who's the curator and the the narrator of our current time here in Japan, has put on quite a lovely day by day, let's just say, itinerary, which has worked really, really well. So David, this is, I believe, your 11th time to Japan.
Oh, look, it's hard to put a number. Yes, it is. I do count one trip to Europe to see my daughter. Hi, Em, if you're listening. We actually stopped each way for one night. So I'm going to take that as counting as two trips. So that adds to the total. But I've been very, very lucky. And that having that number of trips has made me, just ask my wife, become quite obsessed with the place. So I've got to say it's just been a huge, we're only 4 days in, I think, now. And it's been a huge joy seeing you guys sort of see a little bit of what I get from it.
Absolutely. It's been mind-blowing, to be honest with you. Like, it's just such a big place. Like, I haven't seen so many people in so little time, and I haven't seen just everything that I haven't been out of the country until now. So just the whole, it's been a whole mind-boggling experience. And not just as a car, avid car enthusiast, but as a person that likes to see different things, if you want to see different things, you've got to go here. You've got to go to a different country. So 11 times is an incredible amount, and it shows the place must be that good if you keep coming back. And I've never heard a single word said bad about Japan by any person that's ever come here.
I've heard a few, but even the people that I think can think of one couple actually in the car club who are older than us, and they went and they found it absolutely exasperating, which I think if you're here for the first time and you don't have anyone who has traveled here before, I think I can quite understand how that could happen. Mm-hmm. But even when they came back and I was talking to them about it, and they there was a bit of a litany of things that had happened, and a couple of meltdowns and all that sort of thing. And then in the next breath, this person said, next time when I'm back there, you know, I really want to, and I had to catch them and say, oh, so you want to go back? And they were just quiet for a minute. And then they said, yeah, I do. You know, they want to. So even when you have the bad experiences, it's like, oh, but there were so many great experiences, you know, that you want to go back and have them again, or have new ones. So I think the key, you know, I mean, you see places that you love and you absolutely want to come back to them. But the key is to try and find somewhere new as well each time. And I've been really lucky with you guys this time to go to a couple of places that I haven't been before. Which have both been mind-blowing. I'm thinking, I'm talking about you, Toyota Car Museum in Nagoya, and Legoland in Nagoya. it's brilliant to travel and go, as I said, go to places you love, but see new places as well. So that's the key, I think, doing a bit of each.
Absolutely. Edward, how have you found the trip so far? Before we get into a recap of our We Car Talks trip in Japan, Ramen and Revs tour 2023.
Yeah. Fantastic so far. My feet don't agree. They're certainly enjoying the as we speak, but the can't argue with it. I think it's been an amazing place. Kyoto, where we are now, is definitely a highlight so far. I think, you know, Tokyo's nuts. Tokyo has its jumps, but Kyoto is a beautiful, you know, visually beautiful, beautiful place. I loved today. It's always fun seeing, the different cars. Well, I mean, they're different cars, but I mean, we know of these cars. You know, we've all Googled K cars, and we've all kind of, you know, look at them as quirky things, but they're just so normal over here. You know, there's little K trucks going about their daily business, and gardeners and builders and all these sort of things that we think are quirky novelties at home. You know, like, well, that they're just using them. They're just doing their daily stuff. So I think it's nice to see that, you know, how that works. And it's such a flip from Melbourne. Like we were talking about, you know, I was like, oh, there's no Pajeros over here. There's no Pajeros. We've seen a couple, but like literally maybe two, I think that's it. And we've been across Tokyo and Kyoto and on trains and whatever. We've seen two Pajeros in action. Now in Melbourne, obviously that's a completely different genre of car. Like we're the king of dual cab utes and the king of four wheel drives in that.
How many Hiluxes and Rangers have you seen?
Absolutely none. Not one.
Zero.
It's sort of really refreshing in a way, because you just, the whole philosophy is with housing and accommodation and, you know, work trucks and utes and things is just so different. It's like, well, it's just what you need. It's not an excessive culture in that way. And the cars sort of represent that. Like today we walked on that, on a beautiful walk, you know, Philosopher's Path in Kyoto. And we saw probably three or four, you know, little K trucks and vans being used. And like there's a builder and he's just got this tiny, like Daihatsu little K van. And like, it does everything, you know, you sort of think, we live in this ridiculous world in Australia where we think we need bigger and better, and it's just not. It's just sort of this place proves that you don't need that, and life goes on with K cars.
Well, David said to me today, like we passed a K truck, and he's like, they've actually got a bigger, you know, a bigger tray and more usable tray space than any dual cab virtually on sale.
Well, that's right. They're a completely square or rectangular tray. In, you know, they don't have wheel arches eating into it ridiculously, and and roll bars and all that bullshit. And they're a great height. You can load it. You know, you don't have to be King Kong to lift something into
7.5 feet height.
So it makes a hell of a lot of sense.
We are also joined by our fellow companion on Ramen and Revs Tour 2023, Tom. How you doing, Tom?
I'm very well. How's everyone going?
Good, mate. We are
good, thank you.
So, Tom, I don't think have you met Scotty before? I don't think this might be the first time you guys have met.
Yeah, it might be.
Yeah, it might be. Nice to meet you, Scotty.
You too.
So we're just going around to tell, like, asking, you know, what have been the first, you know, interesting things and differences between Australia and Japan. And as you can imagine, we started talking about dual cab utes. Tom, what have you found the differences so far in terms of, you know, Australia culture and Japanese culture?
In terms of culture more broadly, or in terms of the cars that we've come across?
We will get to the cars very, very shortly, but just a quick recap on your end of that.
Culturally, one of the first things that I think you notice is the politeness. And I think everyone has a lot of pride in the things that they do.
Yeah.
Those are two of the things that I noticed. And where this ties in to the cars is it's amazing how clean and tidy everything is. Even the taxis, they're perfectly detailed, perfectly presented. It's quite amazing. And it's universal. It's everywhere. It's probably one of the first, cause even my first trip here, that's one of the first things I remember noticing. Yeah.
Everything is, you're right, it is super clean. We noticed a piece of rubbish on the floor and we're like, oh, that's very Japan-like. It's to the point where of complete hilarity how clean everything is and how polite the world here is. So Japan, big props to that, because that's very, very awesome to see. Scotty, you got any questions you wanted to ask about cars, first and foremost, before we get into this?
I did like the photo that you sent me of the M3.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty funny. I was like, oh, poor guy. They suffer over there too.
So Tom, for some context, Scotty's the guy that had an E46 M3 and he would never get another one.
Oh, right. I've heard stories, Scotty. It's nice to meet you in person. Almost in person.
Almost.
Put a face to the name.
Yeah. Yeah, it was yeah, not my best purchase, but you live and learn.
And you still have this car, or is this one that you've sold?
Oh, no, it's long gone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It is out of here.
Of his Subarus, actually, we were just saying.
Subarus?
Not very many at all.
No. Oh.
Only the key car Subaru. I'm not sure what it's called. We've seen a few of those, and a Levorg or two.
But
not many.
On our walk, you know, and a Vitara here, like four door Vitara, fairly new, looks really big. You know, you just get tiny cars, and I said, "God, look at that thing! It looks huge, and it's a Vitara." You know, and it back Vitara is really quite a small SUV.
Even a Prius seems like quite a big car here compared to what you typically see on the road.
Yeah.
The packaging of these cars is unbelievable. Like the taxis, like the Crown Comforts and Japan taxis and everything. They look small, but you've got so much headroom, leg room. You've got those tons of space in them. Yeah, yes, in a Crown Comfort, it's a bit tight with five, you know, with three people across the back seat. But in terms of, you know, your basic space and everything, it's so well packed. And they're not overly big. They don't take, as you know, lots of space. Now, I thought in Tokyo, especially, there'd be so much traffic, but it actually looked like it flowed pretty well because, you know, everyone's driving these small little cars, or they're not driving at all because they're taking public transport. So that was something that I did not expect to see so far on our travels here.
When you look at some railway stations and the numbers of people that go past through them every day and use the system, Japan Rail has to be one of the most efficient organisations in the world, I think, when you think of all the lines, all the stations, all the staffing, And it just works.
That's very true.
Seamless, you know, that once you get your head around the network of lines and the Japan Rail lines and the privately owned lines, we don't have IC cards, but most people have IC cards, which is like an Oyster card in the UK, 10 times, 1,000 times better than our Mikey in Melbourne. But people are just, you know, touching their phones to the sensor on the gates, and it just flows so seamlessly. Except you have to stop for the tourists, you know, scrambling to get their Japan Rail passes out to actually put through the machine and blocking people and going through the wrong machine and going, and you've got... that's what slows the flow. But
the volume of people, like you said, David, is just mind-boggling. Like Tokyo Central Station, where we've been through a couple of times, I've never seen so many people. And I remember I said, you know, is this normal commuter traffic or is this a special, like, you know, a special day? And it's like, no, this is normal, you know. And even Kyoto, much smaller than Tokyo, but the station's nuts. Just people. Oh, it's my, yeah, really.
Does it feel like claustrophobic or it's not too bad?
No. And that's the weird thing, Scotty. Like it feels just like it works, and you don't feel like you're about to be bowled over by like 30 people. Like it feels like everybody's goes their own way, and you know, everyone's respectful of everyone else. And like, yeah, you do get bumped and stuff a little bit, but then, but it's not like I thought I'd be getting to Tokyo station and feeling like, where am I? And to be fair, to an extent, it is, you know, there's a lot going on, but you can make your way, and there's not a million people, you know, pushing you over. So yeah, that is a good point. That really surprised me as one of my pickups from being here.
Wow. No, I wouldn't have expected that.
I think we're in a country of 125 million people and really quite a comparatively small part of the land is actually populated. A lot of it's mountainous and completely unoccupied. I think it's culturally inherent with all of them that you've got to be respectful of other people's space. And that's why, I mean, sumimasen is one of the most popular expressions here, which is, you know, excuse me, and if anyone bumps you or anything, it's an automatic response sort of thing. Yeah, very different to how it would be in lots of parts of the world, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah, there's no aggro, you know, like normally with that level of crowd, you'd get aggro attitude and, you know, someone ducking up. Here, there's none of that.
And I found myself becoming a more polite person.
Is that even Matthew?
Yeah, is that possible? Surely. Yeah, not. Well,
like I mean, like to be fair, my blood can boil. Edward talking about getting my car crushed. that was on an evening.
Had some drinks a couple of nights ago, and then the game started. Of, oh, okay, what car would you get for this money or that money? Okay, out of all of our cars, you know, we two had to choose for the other one. You know, which car would get crushed? And Tom and I both said the Laser. It's been very dark on us ever since we suggested that the Laser would.
Anyway, getting to what we're going to talk about now, the cars of Japan now. First of all, I want to say the first car we actually sat in Japan was a Japan taxi. It blew me away, as I said earlier, how much space they had. But virtually a Prius drivetrain, I believe. So if you haven't seen these, they kind of look like a London cab, but better. And they suit they suit Japan perfectly, and they swallow, you know, all the people and all the luggage you need, and like they just work. And I'm like, we should have these in Melbourne. You know, like they would work perfectly there instead of having these big, you know, Camrys. And to be fair, they've got some Camrys here, but like, you know, like some of these other cars that we just don't need, like to have this big. And you're right, Ed, as you mentioned earlier, like it's not really about need. It's just about, you know, what can they get by with, and that's perfectly fine.
That was significant. I think they were well, the mainstay of taxis for many, many years has been those Crown Comforts, which, as we've experienced, you know, are basically, you know, a 1980s design, really, and still going strong with, you know, 500,000-600,000 Ks on the clock. We've been in taxis with that sort of Ks on the clock. But the Japan taxi, I think it was I think I remember reading that it was once they'd won the Olympics, the plan was to actually have a new taxi design. And it's just great to see a company like Toyota and how they actually attacked it. Obviously, it's similar in some ways to the British taxis, which are iconic. But things like that, Matt noticed, I had never noticed it, but on the steering wheel boss is the hazard light switch, because whenever they pull over or stop, the hazard lights go on. So it's completely accessible. They're just so well thought out. And the Prius drive mode with its EV mode only, obviously beautiful and suits the car perfectly and suits the traffic in Tokyo brilliantly. So when they set their mind to design something fit for purpose, it's absolutely fit for purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. Could not agree more. But then some of the cars that we've seen. So I'm just going to put this out there. It's like 99% of the cars I've seen have been like Ks or taxis. And the other, like I'm going to put it into a percentage. They are obsessed with bloody G-Wagons. I did not expect this country to be obsessed with G-Wagons. Like, they're just everywhere.
Yeah. From the first morning when we saw those ones on the way to the Welcome Plaza,
lots of G-Wagons.
They are quite literally everywhere, and I'm like, this is insane. Like, I mean, I know they're cooling, quirky cars, but like that blew me away. And another thing that blew me away, they really like their French cars here too. So there's a lot of Renaults and a lot of Citroens I've seen, and some Peugeots. Which has been quite interesting, because like Japan like reliable stuff, yet they're buying stuff that's inverted commas not reliable. So they're not as pragmatic people as I thought, as much as I was expecting them to be. I thought they'd all be in Ks or something like that, and you might see the odd 911 or like, you know, as we saw an E46 M3, you know, like the odd kind of cool car like that, but. The fact that they buy G-Wagons like they're going out of fashion is quite ridiculous. And the fact that you can drive on the roads here, left-hand drive cars that are like technically brand new, and you can buy them like that from the factory from your dealership, which you were saying, David, it's an unbelievable fact.
Yeah, you know, they can have a choice. It was often considered back in the day that was their choice for European cars, because and American cars, which were left-hand drive. It was considered a bit of a status symbol to have a left-hand drive car rather than a, you know, conventional sort of right-hand drive car that were manufactured here. So people would automatically know that you had something foreign and a bit exotic sort of thing. And that availability is still continued on today. So, I mean, there are still plenty of left-hooker cars up here. But, yeah, as Matt said, I'm pretty sure they can still be ordered from the factory that way if people choose, or right-hand drive if they prefer. So it's another option that we don't have.
What has been some other cars that we've seen that would have been really, really interesting and caught our eye? Edward?
Corvette.
Yeah. So last night, Tom and I stopped and had a good chat about this car. So, Tom, it was a C5 Corvette.
Yeah. It was nice and neatly tucked away in a back street, not what you'd expect to see. Another one was a Challenger. I think we've seen two Challengers as well.
We have.
Okay.
For the listeners.
So I think the crazy thing about the C5 Corvette, and I don't know if you guys think the same way, but walking down these little back streets in Kyoto, and then basically just seeing Ks and all these different cars, and then all of a sudden in a driveway, we were like, holy moly, that's a C5 Corvette. It was the most random thing I've ever seen.
It was almost an exotic sight compared to seas of K cars and whatnot.
Range Rover?
Yeah, we've seen a few classic Range Rovers.
Classic Range Rovers. So therefore, that's a bit of a worldwide thing. They've got a bit of a following.
Yeah, one of them was beautifully original, quite a late car, 93, 92. And then one of them looked a bit like a resto mod. It had Wolf alloys, and it had a non-original paint job and whatnot, but still both very interesting to see. Both very special to see.
Yeah, I think cars like that actually require a bit of dedication to actually have it up here. I think you would need to have a very specialist workshop. It'd be fascinating to know what sort of money they're worth. Actually, we should look at Gounet later and have a look at
price. That'd be interesting, because we haven't seen a lot of older cars in general. In fact, almost none. Even iconic older Japanese cars that you'd sort of associate with Japan, Skylines and whatnot, and Mitsubishi GTOs, that sort of thing, we've seen very few of. But that's just where we are.
We've seen one GTO, I think you said, Tom, and we haven't seen any Skylines. We've seen a few Evos, a couple of WRXs, but quite literally, that is it. I haven't even seen like a GTST or anything like this. I haven't seen an RX-7, which has been, the cars you dream of, like, and Scotty, you're part of our generation in that instance, like, the cars we lusted after as the PlayStation generation on Gran Turismo and stuff, we haven't seen, and it's been, and to an extent, it probably makes a bit of sense because we know the Japanese kind of don't really keep their cars super long, do they, David? They kind of move them on quickly. And
no, they become more expensive. The older they get, they become more expensive to keep on the road.
Is it after 10 years, David? Something like that?
It's less than that, actually. I think the tipping point is about 4 or 5, I think.
Okay.
Where it becomes more expensive. Obviously, some people hang on to their cars longer than that. K cars are the exception because the road taxes and regulations regarding them actually aren't as severe or as a constrictive sort of thing to the whole plan. But obviously it sustains the automobile industry because as soon as people are changing their cars over. And there is a tendency with most Japanese people to like new things rather than things that are too old. We were actually talking to a friend of Ed's the other night. That was interesting, talking to Mika about her Daihatsu Move, wasn't it?
Yeah. So she had a 6-year-old Daihatsu, and she said, I've just sold it, a couple of months back. And we were like, why did you sell it? She said, look, I really didn't need it anymore, sort of thing. You can get around on the train network. And I said, well, how old was it? She said, I was only 6 years old. And we were like, well, how much did you get for it? She said, well, it had started making some noises, so it needed a bit of mechanical work. And which is hard to believe for a 6-year-old Daihatsu. Like, you think
exactly.
I'd love to know what was actually wrong with it. It might have just been a bush or something, or a shocker, or who knows. Anyway, so she said there's some mob that comes around and, buys cars off people like that. So they gave her $800 for it or something and took it away. And then they'll probably fix it and resell it in terms of that car. But yeah, it's sort of an odd notion to us, like a 6-year-old car to sort of have it taken away, and she got a few $100s.
Some cars, I think she was saying too, they'll come and look at them and they'll just say, oh, we'll take it, remove the problem of them having to get rid of it or pay the shukat. I think it's called shukatsen, which is like the roadworthy every year that they have to have, sort of thing. So if that's up the thought of doing it and spending money on something that's 5 or 6 years old, they just think, oh, it's not worth it, I remember Daniel O'Grady from Wasabi Cars had a Suzuki Wagon R too, and the air conditioning compressor packed up and he took it in to be repaired, and they said, oh, why do you want it repaired? Like, I mean, just get another car, it's probably not worth repairing, it's an old car, and it was a similar age, 5 or 6 years old, I think, from memory.
Not old compared to the Australian car park, it's just not old at all.
How many of those cars end up in overseas in different markets.
A lot.
In such contrast to, like, we've just walked around Kyoto today and there's beautiful ancient temples and buildings and stuff that's been there for centuries, and then which is sort of is an opposite philosophy to let's treat the cars like Kleenex and churn through them and kill the environment. It's sort of strange in a way that it's yin and yang.
Like how everything is packaged in plastic.
Yeah.
For an otherwise very environmentally conscious nation.
Mm. Yes, correct.
Yeah, you're right. You are right about that. I've noticed that. And they tape everything closed and they use a lot of resources here that I thought they'd be a bit more better with, but I guess they're really good with their recycling because there's bins quite literally everywhere, and then they have your recycling part and your combustibles, which I'm assuming they burn. I'm assuming that's what they do with it.
Yeah.
So So yeah, it's actually quite a cool contrast. But I have seen some older cars, and on our first proper day in Tokyo, I did see a Sport 20, which is a Mazda SP20 as we've got them here
Got them
in
here.
Australia. And I saw that in red, had the optional roof racks and everything, and it looked really cool. I'm like, well, I didn't expect to see that here. Like, I thought they'd be all gone and they're in the big garage in the sky, but there was one there. And so that was kind of like the first, like, oh, that's kind of cool that we saw. What about you guys? What else caught your eye during your trips here in Japan?
We saw the Miata in like an original MX-5. I don't know why I keep calling it a Miata, because we don't get those, and neither do they. So yeah, MX-5 original, like 89, 90 model or something, in that Mariner blue. And it's like it's a middle-aged guy driving it. I thought, hey, it looks like he's had that for a while. That was just motoring around Kyoto. Lots of Honda N1s, like David's imported N1. There's quite a bunch of those. What else?
Very nicely modified. Oh, sorry, David, you go.
I was just going to say, outside the hotel the other night, we got out of a taxi, and in front of us was a Toyota Origin, which turned
Yes.
out to be a one of 1,000 ever built. I remember seeing one years ago, and running along the streets of Kyoto trying to see what it was, because I'd never seen it one before.
Yeah.
Quite a retro-inspired.
Sort of like a Vauxhall Cresta with suicide doors.
Very good description. That's
Yeah.
exactly what it's like.
Like an early 60s Cresta, but it's a newish Toyota.
Mid-2000s. And which engine did it have in it, Matty?
I didn't go down that far down the track, but I just kind of know what they have. But I'm
I think it's one of the 3-liter V6s.
V6. It's probably a 1MZ or something that they had at the time. Tell me
So
what you.
smaller than the engine in the Corolla Blade that went past us yesterday on the freeway.
Yep, that's that. I was like, oh, that's a bit of Scotty. I think I was saying that in my head. I was like, because they know what you like those, Scotty.
They're pretty cool.
We saw a supercharged second generation Turago, or their first generation Estima. Supercharged one of those, which is like got to be a rare car. Like, that's pretty ridiculously rare.
That's awesome.
So we did see that. And Tom, you said you saw something yesterday?
I was just going to mention we've seen a few. Well, we've seen one nicely modified Jimny, sort of done up in like a jacked up with big tires and whatnot,
Oh,
which was
that's
interesting.
interesting.
Had some nice personality added to it.
Yeah.
A lot of
And
Jimnys
the
in
land
general,
with
but
the graphics down the side. Yeah.
yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That was cool.
Oh, speaking of Land Rovers, Scotty, we have to tell you this. So we went to Legoland for Maddie's birthday yesterday. Now, Legoland's a very big operation in Nagoya. And they had these miniature displays that seem to go on forever, which is kind of they've made out of Lego, icons of Japan.
Cities, essentially.
But like mini cities out of Lego. Anyway, so part of that is they've made Lego cars, and some of them are recognizable and some of them are a bit more generic, But there was one bit where David and I spied at the same time. There was a freeway on ramp sort of going uphill, and there was a rescue truck, like an RACV truck, loading a car onto the back, and it was blocking this whole line of traffic. Now, the whole line of traffic were all Japanese cars sort of waiting, and the car getting loaded onto the truck, blocking them, was a Land Rover Discovery.
Oh,
And we were just like, you couldn't get any more
my God.
accurate. I thought, wow, that's the Japanese really having a laugh and just going, yeah, you don't know how to make a reliable car, Land
We
Rover.
Like
So
the fact
good.
that even Japan realizes how unreliable they are is just quite funny.
They
And
got a big version of that, don't they, that Lego released?
they do now, yes, they do, absolutely.
Because I saw that at High Point, and they had it there on display, and it was jacked up with the wheel off.
Yeah.
We saw it at Legoland yesterday on display, and it said all it needs is a puddle of oil underneath, and it would be
Yeah,
completely
that's right, the Lego one, yeah. A
perfect. I
Lego
could just get some
puddle.
soy sauce, one of those little sachets of soy sauce.
Yeah, just empty that.
And you just need like the driver standing out, just holding his head, shaking.
Yeah.
That'd be
A
perfect.
Lego man with his little hands on his head.
Yeah.
So good. So good.
Oh, I love it.
Hello to all the Land Rover drivers listening.
No, and the one sitting with us currently, Tom, he's our resident Land Rover.
Sorry,
guy.
Tom.
We actually had to bring Tommy over there for him to witness the greatness that was the and like as amazing as Legoland was, Ed's like my favorite part, you know, was was the Land Rover broken down. I was like, oh, that's just
I love that they've gone to the trouble. Not only was it a Land Rover going onto the truck, but it's holding up like eight cars behind it. it's so beautifully done, and it's a real screw you to the British car industry.
Great attention to detail.
Yes, very much.
Very good.
So we probably can't talk about cars in Japan without talking about our day on Sunday, when we actually took a bullet train to Nagoya again, as well as yesterday, and visited the Toyota Motor Museum, which that was pretty special for on many levels, given the display of cars there. We went into the cultural hall of the museum, mainly because we were looking for the cafe, and we just all stopped in our tracks. This was just the display, the effort gone into the display of car models, both plastic kits and die-cast car brochures, car badges in this sort of darkened sort of hall with these great big glass cabinets of models and tin toy models back, you know, 50 years was just nuts. Just seeing.
Oh, you took a photo of all the brochures, didn't you?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah,
it was,
I've been following along through your pictures.
Oh, brilliant. Okay. Yep. And that was a real highlight for me. So not technically a car, but one of the real car highlights was there. Mm-hmm. And Eddie and I spied it together and had a bit of a moment with it with the lovely little Japanese girl who was explaining the nuances. But it was the original Toyota 2000 GT from You Only Live Twice, the 1967 James Bond movie. So I've seen the movie multiple times, but seeing the car from that movie, which is one of one now, was pretty amazing. They're an incredible car.
It was pretty damn special because, like, you're right, that is one of one. It is the car. You know, it's a car that I grew up, you know, aspiring to like, wow, that's it's a 2000 GT, and Spectre. We got to see three of them. We got to see. At the standard hardtop and another convertible that was converted a bit later, and obviously the Bond car where Sean Connery actually had his backside in. It blew me away. And you know, like we had, you're right, we had a bit of a man moment there. We need a moment to ourselves where we just breathe in. We're like, whew, this is actually happening. It's a bit of a pinch yourself kind of moment. So that was incredible, and this is like, that wasn't even, you know, and that wasn't even in the actual in the display, like, you know, in the display they had some incredible cars. But just going back to your point, David, about you know, the collection hall of all the different models and all the different brochures and stuff, that was probably the highlight of that, of besides obviously seeing that 2000 GT. That blew me away. I couldn't, you'd go to museums just for that section. Like you just would. It just blew me away.
Like an art gallery, wasn't it?
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And everywhere you looked, there was something, and it was so well organized and well, it was so well curated because you know, museums and stuff are curated. It's not just like, you know, like an art museum. And in a lot of ways, this is a museum of art. It's history. It's what it is. It gave a new understanding of how important cars are in the grand scheme of things, of where they've come and to where they are. So yeah, absolutely. I you know, not a way to Toyota for putting that on because it was pretty bloody special.
It would have been very fun being the team at Toyota whose job it was to put that collection together, especially the brochures and everything like that.
It wouldn't have worked for us. We would still be sitting on chairs going, "Oh, check this one out. Look at that."
Yes. Exactly.
It was interesting that there were a lot of non-Toyotas in that collection. So it's honestly, going into it, I thought that it would be this is just going to be an amazing collection of Toyotas and things related just to Toyota. But no, and sirree, you know, it's a museum in the true sense of the word. Like, it was the history of all the badges they had on display of old car mascots, you know, from Radiators. And they had brochures from all sorts of stuff that weren't necessarily Toyotas. But they and a whole bunch of models in that Bain Marie sort of right down the middle of this display, and they'd all done it chronologically, so it was sort of like 1920s, 1930s, or 1900s, and, you know, through the decades, which was really nice. So as you walk down this wall of brochures, you're walking through the decades, and that appeals to my autistic nature with vehicular things, and the models the same. You know, they laid them out like a roadway. So it's like you were looking at a giant traffic jam through the decades as you walk along. And that, I thought, was a great way to display model cars because it puts them all in context. And I thought, I've never done that in my cabinet when I've displayed them. They've all just been, the dinky toys are together and the matchboxes are together or the Tomicas are together. But I thought, wouldn't it be great to do them by era? You know, what a good way to do it. And they're all the same scale. So in that display case anyway, and it just made a lot of sense to me. I thought, so I'll take some photos of that. That's a good reference for something you can bring back home. Absolutely. And maybe achieve at a later date.
Good man cave display. The cars are arranged similarly. The actual cars in the display was there.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, it was a good lesson in it was like a display of the history of cars as a whole, not even just Japanese cars, but the last 100 years of automobiles. It was really well done.
Well, the thing that was amazing at the very start was a diagram of Da Vinci's. With a spring-powered car, remember that, Matt?
Like, that was awesome.
It wasn't called a car; it was like a spring-powered device or something. There was a very rudimentary blueprint of something that would almost work on clockwork, and that was like 1400 something. It was, and then all the way right through to a Mirai, like the last car in the display is a Toyota Mirai, which is their hydrogen-powered car. Mm. So, it was staggering. Absolutely staggering.
Can I just say, like, we would have been incredible to he would have been an incredible mind, Da Vinci, considering he had nothing, you know, like, to work with, and the stuff that he you know had the ideas of in the spring powered car, and I was just like, it just I had no idea he dabbled in that, and that completely blew my mind. But you're right, Edward, about there wasn't as many Toyotas as you think. There wasn't really that many in, if you look at the grand scheme of things, in comparison to everything else. Like, there was a fair few Nissans, there was a fair few, you know, Mazdas, you know, XYZ. There was a bit of there was American stuff, there was European stuff, there was it absolutely blew my mind. And Scotty, there was a really clean original R32 GTR that was there. I'm like, oh, that's a bit of you, Scotty. Seeing as you've owned one of those, and you know, but then they had on the opposite side, they had a LS400 and they had a W126 Mercedes. You know, like it had a bit of absolutely everything, and and it didn't discriminate. It didn't just put the highest performance versions of them. So like, you had a 323 or a KE10 Corolla that was very basic, you know, and the fact that they put a bit of everything in there like that. You know, they weren't always like the top spec, high performance, you know, or fully specced out, you know, top of the range model. They were sometimes more than often the base model, and I really respected that. I'm like, that's actually really cool, because for me, a base model shows the car in its most basic form, which you know, the car is based off. Like, to, for example, you know, you have your Corolla, and then it goes to your Corolla XX or what have you, you know. So I just, the fact that existed and they put it together like that and curated it the way they did was just genius. So Scotty, when you get to Japan, you need to go there. Like, it's bloody epic.
Mm-hmm. Yep, will do, on the list.
What other cars, gentlemen, have we seen before we finish and leave on this very quick edition of a Japanese recap part one?
I saw a Rover Mini today in very nice condition, you know, like the last of the round nose minis that they made in like early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
That was good. A couple of cool bikes, like Honda Gyro bikes, you know, three wheelers.
Mm-hmm. Probably one of the crazy ones I saw was, I had no idea what it was. To me, it just looked like a Jeep. But then because it said Jeep on the side, and you look at the front, I'm like, is that a Mitsubishi badge? And it was a Mitsubishi Jeep. Like I had no idea that it, like David had to fill my novice brain in with the information about that. It was the things that you wouldn't even know have existed have reared their head and said, oh, look at me, you know, this is and I really love stuff like that. But yeah, so that was kind of like the first cool car that I guess we kind of saw on our first morning walk. So that was pretty exciting. I do want to add in also we went to the Honda Welcome Plaza. That was like quite literally the first thing we did on the Monday. So on the Saturday morning, and David was in his element. Let's be honest. Yeah, he was. You know, straight away they had some cars outside on display. They were all open, and the fact that you could just walk in and sit in a brand new N1 and or you know some of their other offerings and walk inside, and they've got you know Type R. They had a ZRV, and they got a gift shop, and they got a bit of that. It was pretty bloody amazing. They didn't have a little friend Asimo there this time around, but he's now retired. His joints need more WD-40 than they can give. But I wanted to get your thoughts on that, gentlemen, as a manufacturer's kind of mini display for their head office. It was so clean and so simplistic. Normally there'd be like stuff crap everywhere, but this was really, really good. I think you picked up on that, Ed.
Yeah, I was impressed with its sort of minimalism, and you know, a lot of head offices, you know, a display like that would be sort of overly flashy. And it just wasn't. It was sort of very environmental and sustainable and minimalistic, which I liked. I mean, I suppose you could look at that and say, geez, Honda are doing badly. They've run out of money and they can't finish their own foyer. That's one option. But it seemed to be far more deliberate than that. It was like
no, an art gallery.
Yeah, it was a bit like a little simple art gallery. And yeah, it was just quite humble and well thought out. Yeah, I thought, yeah.
It was also very welcoming with the cafe. It wasn't structured as though you weren't welcome there unless you were ready to buy a car immediately. It felt like you were encouraged to go and have a look.
Quite Scandinavian in the finish of, you know, a lot of wood, a lot of warm timber and greenery around. So it was sort of a Scandinavian feel. Like if you told me that was a Volvo, you know, showroom, I would have believed you.
Mm.
Mm. Yeah, that was definitely a highlight for me on the first day, and you know, the fact that you can go there and ask for a catalogue, is that how they say for their brochure?
A catalogue.
And they don't just give you the car catalogue; they'll give you the accessories brochure catalogue, which is something that we don't really get in Australia.
Not anymore.
So we were going through the car, you know, the catalogues. And some of the accessories I can get is just phenomenal. Now, I'm going to add to this point because David also that day took us to a little shop in the back of Nagano Broadway, towards the back of that, which was called what, David?
It's called Book Garage.
Which basically is just an incredible collection of Japanese brochures from virtually every manufacturer, all put in order. And they weren't just like, you know your Fairlanes with your Fairlanes, except, you know, like we'd have it here in Australia. It was you know, they had, you know, your certain models and certain years and certain, it was fantastic. And Tom and I spent a bit of money there.
That's worth every cent. What'd you get, Manny?
Well,
just to name a couple.
Me being the loser that I am, I went and got couple of the JDM laser brochures for their TX3s and stuff that they sold.
Yeah, that's cool.
Which was kind of cool. I also got an MR2 brochure, and I got something related to a couple of things for the Scamp as well. So I was pretty happy with my haul. Tom, on the other hand, now Thomas, your collection is quite astounding, isn't it?
I'm so happy with it. I spent a small fortune.
Worth every cent.
I'm pretty sure they'll get dinner that night after you, or cash only.
Absolutely. But every brochure is in beautiful condition and a nice plastic cover. And every brochure is so thick, there's hours of enjoyment in there. Just looking at the pictures, because obviously I can't read read Japanese, but incredible. And so I was just to name some of the brochures that I purchased for everyone. I got an accessories brochure for an R33 GTR, which is very cool, an R33 sales brochure, and an R32 Nissan GTR sales brochure, which I thought were very cool. And I got a Japanese market Nissan GQ Patrol sales and accessory brochure. I called the Safari over there. Incredible. And some really interesting options on those cars, which are quite the Patrol, that is, which are quite basic here, including heated seats. I thought it was very interesting. Yeah, it's just amazing.
It's stuff that we had no idea about. Like we didn't
think
we would be able to do that. Sorry, David, I didn't mean to.
No. I was just going to say, I think Thomas was disappointed we weren't staying there. At one stage, he was lying on the floor going through or on the lower shelf.
Quite
methodical in his approach. I was impressed.
You could spend hours. It was for a car guy, that was a mecca. It was incredible. And the way everything was organized as well, because we have car bookshops in Melbourne, but they're not organized that well. It was remarkable. Remarkable. You could spend a day very easily.
Oh, absolutely. It was quite literally automotive pornography on the grandest of scales.
And Scotty, I bought a dinky catalogue for, you know, dinky models from the 60s. It's like the full catalogue of all the ones you could get at that time. So
cool.
I thought, you know, $12, like basically Aussie, yeah, I'll have that.
Yeah, 100%.
But I restrained on the other brochures. There were many that I liked, but there were none that I sort of had to have, you know?
Yeah, I know the feeling. I know what you mean.
Well, it's interesting though, because like you wouldn't think of that as a key place to go, but I think for car lovers, it's you're right, it's a mecca, Tom. Like you have to go there. It's this little shop, and you have to, preferably don't bring a bag like a backpack with you, because you will possibly knock the next person over. But you know, it had virtually everything, and you just say, oh, have you got, you know, this car? I'd be like, oh yeah, and then they'd take you to the section, and they even knew where all the sections were. I was like,
yeah,
wow. We have to thank Mr. Prince for finding that spot. Well,
I've got to thank Owen Salmon on Instagram, because he posted that he was there a couple of weeks ago, and I said, where is this place? He sent me the link. And, yeah, that was why we were there. I had no idea of it previous to only a couple of weeks ago. So it was a great find.
Absolutely. So we've actually got to finish up early today on this first part of our Japanese, you know, experience. We're going to have an extended version once we're back. But if we had to name a highlight quickly before we finish the show so far, what would your highlights be? We'll start with you, Ed.
Kyoto. Today's walk through Kyoto.
Tom?
I'd have to agree with Ed. I think Kyoto and the car bookstore as well. I think those two things. But it's hard to pick a favorite. We've done a lot of amazing things in a short time.
We haven't even mentioned Nakano Broadway we went to, which is all, you know, a lot of little specialty shops, including a lot of model cars on sale. Very desirable, you know, buying a few nice little model cars from there. I bought two Renault 16s, which is weird, Scott, because they're French and I'm not in France.
Yeah. That's cool, though.
Mm.
Mr. Prince?
My highlight's been seeing you guys enjoy it so much.
Oh, mate, you are too kind.
No, true.
And, Scotty, hopefully we have inspired you to get your backside over here and kind of G'd you up for it.
Yeah, we definitely are. Ash and I will be going next year.
Awesome.
Rudy will start booking when we can in a few months' time.
Lovely. Beautiful.
Yep.
Yeah. You're going.
What about you, Matty? What's your favourite bit?
There's been so many little things that have you know, been so good. Today's definitely been a highlight, but spending my birthday with, honestly, like, you know, the three best dudes I've known, and, you know, like, and sorry, Scotty, you're part of this as well.
That's
but,
okay.
But like, seriously, spending my birthday in another country, looking at Toyotas and looking at, you know, all these different cars and you know, just having your real good mates with you and you know, just sharing that experience has been absolutely, you know, it's been the best few days of my life, honestly. It's been fantastic. So I don't mean that any lightly. I genuinely mean that. It's been incredible. So I just wanted to thank you guys personally on the show for that.
Thank you, Matt.
You are welcome.
Gentlemen, I think that is a lovely way to end the show. We will talk next week about basically the next part of our journey, which we're going to have a lot of information, a lot more stuff going on.
Scotty, bit of a sneak peek. Could you give us a sneak peek?
We can give you a sneak peek.
Just a couple of things.
We are going to Hiroshima on Wednesday.
Mazda Thursday.
Yep.
Yeah. Mazda on Friday.
Mazda on Friday. Yeah. So we've got a lot planned, and so yeah, we'll keep it at that for now, and then.
No, that's all. Just want a taste. That's all.
And I think that's pretty much it. Scotty, any golf tip before we finish?
There was a comment made by Tiger Woods recently that he said to people that are amateur golfers and that to stop watching. Well, he said it in a different tone, but I'll got to say it a bit nicer because he put some swear words in there, but stop watching the YouTube videos all the time and just get out there and hit balls.
There you go. Yep.
Awesome.
Good advice.
Well said. David Prince, Edward Bunting, you guys do a podcast?
Yeah, but tonight's tip is to book a flight to Japan, come to Japan.
Absolutely. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, good tip.
Like and share our Facebook page. It's Car Talk TYQ with Manny J. If you missed any of our previous episodes, they're all up on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasting app. Don't forget to subscribe, rate to it, and review to us there. Check out our merch. Go to Teespring Store. Go to teespring.com and type in Car Talk Store. As well as become a patron to our Patreon, go to patreon.com/CarTalkPodcast. Support the show there. Put in CTP20 at the checkout in for 20% off with any of our merch. Gentlemen, honor as always, and I'll see you next time. Take it easy.
Yeah.